Good morning, and welcome to Talking About California, our series of discussions about California, a place where Californians who talk about themselves, their lives, and their work here. I'm Cal Winslow. I'm your host. This morning, we'll be close to home again. We'll be talking to Will Smith, a longtime resident of the coast. Will and his wife Marge raised a family here. Will is a family counselor and a mediator. He's also worked in the hills and in the mill. We'll talk about that, but also about Will and his early life in the Deep South, and also his life as a football player. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
Great to have you here. Well, let's just jump right into this and maybe not go in strictly chronological order. I've always been fascinated by the idea of you coming up here and walking into the mill and doing that kind of work. What did you do? Just show up and ask for a job?
Pretty much. I had been, before I came here, dean of students at UC San Diego and sort of a dean at the University of Michigan. And I had been doing a lot of consulting work. And I'd kind of, as a kid, I played a lot of sports. And before that, a lot of physical work. And I had just come to a place where I wanted to do something more physical. And so I'd always, for whatever reason, I can't honestly say what it was, dreamed of working in the woods. And when I came here, the redwoods and all of that kind of intrigued me. And it sounds pretty surprising, I'm sure, that someone with, you know, with the background that I had would want to go to work in the woods, but I did, and I did want to, and I did do it.
And was it in the woods first and then in the mill?
Yes.
And what did you do in the woods?
I was what you call a choker setter. And a choker setter is a person who hooks up logs that have been cut down and so that the tractors can pull them to a landing, what's called a landing, and stack them up so they can be transported out on trucks.
It's a pretty heavy work.
Yeah, it's a very heavy work. But I was still of a, you know, football. I played professional football, you know that. And that's heavy work. So it wasn't a lot different. It was very different, but no more physically strenuous. You know, it was a kind of physically similar. And that was what I was feeling I needed to do or wanted to do when I came here.
And you worked with a crew out in the woods?
Yes. Mainly the driver of the tractor, and I worked together. The two of us worked together most days after. And that was, you'd get up early in the morning before sunrise and get out to the woods right around sunrise, and then work until 4 or 5 in the evening and come home.
And here's an obvious question, Will. Were people surprised to find a football player, a professional football player, working with them, and a veteran of the Raiders to boot, and then a black football player?
I think they were. But it all seemed to work fine. I enjoyed it, and most of the people I worked with, I felt I got along with very well. So it was not a big deal for me. I guess after I sort of finished working there, I discovered more about how I was viewed than while I was there, if that makes sense.
But, and you worked in the mill as well, down during Fort Bragg.
When the wood season was over, I worked as on the green chain. And the green chain is where wood is, logs are cut into wood, into lumber of various sizes. And what I did was stack it, pile it up, stack it up in the lumber yard to be carted off to people who purchased it. You know, you'd have the various sizes, you know, like 2x4s, 2x6s, 2x8s, 4x4s, at various lengths and, you know, stacked. And the stacking of the wood was the challenge. It was a constantly moving thing, and that's what I liked about it. You were busy from the time you got there until you left, really.
And again, heavy work, dangerous work?
Heavy work, dangerous work. You could get hurt very easily if you weren't prepared for it. And strangely, you know, I guess my appetite for that kind of work was acquired as an athlete. And it wasn't a difficult thing for me. It was to have to be focused, continuously focused, was something that I was very comfortable with because I had done it all my life. And that's what that kind of work allowed me to do.
And how long did you do that, Will?
Just short of 10 years.
10 years. Huh? Yeah. And looking back on it, did you accomplish your goal of...
I think I did. I made... I don't know if I had conscious goals then, but when I finished, you know, I went back to doing consulting work of the sort that I did before I started doing that, and I enjoyed that as well.
Okay, let's back up a little bit and talk about your earlier life, and then maybe we'll work forward again after that. You come from pretty much the Deep South, from the area around, or from Little Rock, Arkansas. You went to school there. You graduated from high school, from a segregated high school. Can you say a few words, looking back, on what it was like to grow up in the segregated South?
Yes. My childhood, from my vantage point, was, I always felt very positive about it. In my world, I guess I'll just talk about it that way rather than to try to generalize too much. But it was a very complete world, really, for me. And it was very different from what I experienced when I went to the University of Michigan, which is where I went to college, where I went there on a football. I went there really on an academic scholarship, but it was to play football. And it took me a while to adjust to being a black person in the North as opposed to the South, because where I went to school, in fact, I think when I graduated from Dunbar High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, that was the last class before they started to integrate the school system there. It was solidly black when I was there, and it was a self-contained system, and there are a lot of positives that go with that. When you are part of a system that, when you're a minority in a larger system, or this is my personal experience, I don't want to generalize too much, but it's very different. You don't feel, I didn't feel, well, I guess I'm realizing as I talk that a lot of what I think about how it is to be a minority in a system where you're going to school with and you're participating in a social system that is predominantly white, in my case, and it's different than being in a system where you are, where you have access to the whole system. You're not made to feel like you are, you're not a part of the bigger system, or that you're, you know, you have to earn your right to be a part of it. You have to struggle to be a part of it, which I never felt. Because I was an athlete, I think I got past a lot of that without realizing it.
You've told me that you did all kinds of sports in school. Is that right?
True. Football, baseball. Well, baseball, minimal, but basketball and track. Football and track were really my biggest things. Basketball was, I did play basketball as well. And I played for a good long time. I played a fair amount of baseball, but I quit playing baseball earlier than I did, and I quit playing basketball. I also fought boxing. I did that. I didn't do a lot of that, but I did enough of it to feel like it was... My childhood was filled with athletic.
So you're there, Will, right on the cusp of this huge historic event. Is it the year right after you graduated, 1957? I think listeners, many will remember, but just in case, that was the year. I can still see in my mind's eye this huge Gothic structure, Central High in Little Rock, Arkansas. Nine kids, I guess I've seen it in films as well, nine kids walking up the steps with maybe 1,000 or more angry people screaming at them, trying to stop them. This was one of the first major attempts to implement Brown versus the Board of Education and integrate education in the South, and it's when President Eisenhower had to, I guess, respond by sending in the 101st Airborne Division and to protect the children. They nationalized the National Guard. That was Arkansas in the 1950s. You just missed that, by a minute.
True.
Well, what was it like thinking about that, about school, when you were... And you knew people, didn't you, who went over to Central High?
I graduated in 1955. Yeah. And like you say, I think that happened, the attempt to integrate the school system there was in 57.
So, yeah.
I knew all of the kids who were involved. Like I say, it was an all-black system. And you know everybody. So I did know those people, and I had two brothers who were still in school there, two half-brothers. So I was very tuned into what was going on. My home was about a block and a half from Little Rock High School. So it was like in my old neighborhood that this all of these things were taking place. So I was very tuned into it. It was kind of surrealistic for me for a while, you know. It was, but it was a life-changing event. Most of what I knew I got through my mother and through my brothers. Things that were happening on the ground there. I think I was tuned more into that than what was coming through the media. I have a niece who actually did attend Little Rock High School after it was integrated. She was still in elementary school when all that happened, but she ended up attending school there, and so I did all of my awarenesses of what happened there was through her and through my brothers. And my brother was the president of the student council for the all-black high school on the opposite. Well, Little Rock High School was on the west side in the western section of Arkansas. He lived in the eastern section, and he was president of the high school there. And as for, he ended up being the city manager and Bill Clinton's finance person, but he was very actively involved in community efforts to make things work, make that whole system work after it happened. So
desegregation, but we'll come back to that. Let's just move on, though. Next to when this was happening, you've gone up to Michigan, to Ann Arbor, and I wonder, maybe you could, do you remember, what was the recruitment process? How did you end up at Michigan, say, as opposed to any other place? And, can you remember any of the details of that?
A few. There were two ball players from Dunbar, which is my school, who had gone before me. One to the University of Michigan, one to the University of Wisconsin. There was another ball player from Hot Springs, Arkansas, which is Bill Clinton's home, who went to the University of Illinois. And I was, how can I say it? I was recruited. I'd made All-State as a football player the year before. And they had made contact with me, the coaches, and talked to me about whether I would want to go there. I had other offers, but I talked with Jim Pace, who ended up being my roommate there, and based on those discussions and my conversations with the people who recruited me, I thought Michigan was the picture that I had of what they were offering me appealed to me, I guess is the most I could say.
Did you visit the school? Did they?
No, I didn't. Before I went there early. I went as soon as I graduated from high school. I went there and worked before I actually entered classes in the fall. But I loved it. I thought it was great.
So this is KZYX. My name is Cal Winslow. Our program is Talking About California. And our guest today is Will Smith of Mendocino, who grew up in the Deep South, played football, came out to California. We're talking about his life and experiences. And we're now at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And it must have been a big change, Will, to become a student at Michigan, a huge place, after Dunbar. Do you want to say anything about that?
Well, it was like a constant fun house, I guess you would say, when I first went there. When I started school there, you could not play. You had to sit out a year. You couldn't play as a freshman. We had a lot of practice, and there was the equivalent of playing, the amount of practice that we had. And we played, but I was kind of surprised. I expected things to be a bit different than they were. It took a while to adapt to it. The difficulty of going to school with white students was something that I expected was going to be a lot harder than it worked out to be. It seemed very simple. It went very easy. You know, it was very easy for me to make that adjustment. Football, I expected that to be harder than it turned out to be. My relationship with the coaches, though, was complicated. I had been accustomed to having a much closer relationship with the coaches in high school than I ended up having at Michigan. I think it took me a year or so to really acclimate to the world there. I mean, it was it's much larger. I think when I started school there, the population of students was somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000-25,000 students. I think it's up around 50 now. There's not a lot more I can say about it. I enjoyed the whole time I was there. And I worked there after I returned from playing professional football.
And you were a linebacker.
Yes.
And a pretty successful linebacker, would you say, in the Big Ten?
I would
big
say
school?
Yes. I'm not a objective judge of I would say I was very effective, yeah.
But, Will, if you don't mind my saying this, I remember talking to your wife, Marge, and being told that you got into a little trouble with some of the authorities. Should I be more specific, or do you want to explain?
Well, my wife is white, and that was... I was not accustomed... I didn't know, it took me a while to learn to live by the rules of the time. I think I was more self-involved than maybe I could have been, and I was a little slow in learning how to fit in into the systems that existed there. And the coaches, I can honestly say that we had open fights, but I feel that when I first got there, after my first year, I was valued, my future looked pretty much brighter than it turned out to be, and I was predicted to be an all-American ball player, and my relationship with my wife sort of ended all that, and my relationship with the coaches got kind of chilly, I guess you could call it. Although I never had any open fights with them, it's just that I got relegated to, I played, but I was not favored. I was in the way that it appeared I might be when things started off. And it took me a while to understand that in a way that I could have my own opinions about what I should do. I feel like I'm talking in a very strange way here, but...
just to make it more concrete for the listener, though, I mean, I think, once again, you're very modest, but I think Marge told me her parents actually got a call from the dean or the president.
Right.
It wasn't as much in the background, maybe, as you're saying right now.
That's absolutely true. A lot of communication was happening between the school and her parents, and no one ever talked to me about it. The coaches never talked to me, and that was one of the things that was very confusing for me, because there were other ball players who were talked to very directly and firmly by the coaches, but that never happened with me. And so I was kind of in the dark about, Marge's parents, we have a letter now that was written to them about Marge and me, and they never shared that with me.
And who was they, Will?
The dean of, there was a dean, student affairs. In fact, I ended up being heading up one of the departments that this person was responsible for. But they wrote her a letter, wrote her parents a letter about us, and I can't recall. They were convinced that she would see the light at some point and end her relationship. It was surprising. They said that we should... they somehow wanted... talked against anyone talking to me directly about their concerns, but when I met her parents, everything worked out fine. We got along fine. I was always kind of in the dark about the amount of unhappiness on the part of everybody. All I knew is that I just got sort of put on in the back row as often as possible.
Although Marge will say, excuse me for going behind your back again like these deans have been doing, but Marge reminded us that her father was what we would have called a left winger, an auto worker, active in his union, a left wing union. He followed the civil rights movement and listened to Martin Luther King's speech with tears in his eyes sometime, but was a little shaken when she came home with the news of her new boyfriend. Is she telling the truth there?
Yeah, that's true. But again, you know, they were very upset. Once I met them, though, I got along very well with both her dad and her mom. But they were very, initially very upset with her. And it took them a while before they were willing to meet me. But they eventually did, and from that point forward, we had a good relationship. And I had a good relationship, and still have, with Marge's brother and sisters.
So there weren't many black players at Michigan and in the Big Ten in those years, were there?
When I first went there, I think there were three black ball players. I was one, Jim Pace was one, and there were a couple of other ball players. I've forgotten their names. Alvin Gross was third during the early part. But until I left, I was drafted by the Chicago Bears after my senior year. They started increasing the number of ball players. And now, if I'm not mistaken, there's probably as many black ball players as there are white ball players at Michigan.
Oh, I think so. It must be a striking difference to you to watch college football today in every position now, even finally quarterback.
The quarterback at Michigan is a black kid.
Yeah. So did you think of yourself as a pioneer?
Surprisingly, no. Because about four or five people had gone before me. I think there were only about four or five people who had come from the South. There was a guy named J.C. Caroline. I think he was from South Carolina. He was one of the first. In fact, I played with him with the Bears for a short time. I got to know him personally. And there was a ball player from Hot Springs. There were only a handful of us who went, but during the early period of Big Ten schools recruiting black ball players from the South. But the truth is that I guess I was a pioneer, but I just, I didn't think of it that way. I was just taking advantage of an opportunity that was given to me. I was very happy about it and felt good about it, but I didn't have a lot of adult input into. Very early, I was sort of a self-contained kid. I started working very early, and like I said, my grandfather and I had sort of a distant relationship until I was about 13 or 14 years old. My grandmother, they didn't have the kind of experience in the world that I was moving into so that they could really talk to me a lot about it. So I kind of did my own problem solving, I guess you would say. And my movement into the world that I ended up in, it was my thinking that, and it was a lot of it wasn't very good. You know, you learn the hard way. It was good. I have no regrets, but it was filled with conflict for a good long time that I just had to learn to live with and understand on my own.
Did the Michigan team ever play in the South?
No, we played teams from the South, like we played Georgia Tech in Ann Arbor. We played That's the one Southern team that stood out. I played quite a bit of professional ball in the South, though. But things had changed when I reached that, you know, when I reached that level.
So the transition from college, from Michigan to the pros, what was that? Was that something you took as just what you expected?
Well, it was. You know, the ball, playing ball, I enjoyed playing professional ball more than I did college ball, frankly. For the reasons that I discussed earlier, you know, in college, the whole idea of in loco parentis, I'm sure you're familiar with that. When I became a dean of students, they were at the point of letting that go, you know. And I wasn't aware of it before, that in loco parentis as a concept existed. I think it was that complicated college football for me, is the coaches and felt some need to be kind of a parent, but I don't think they ever figured out how to be a good parent with me.
Well, that was the problem. I think that listeners probably know, but just in case for the younger set, we might say, in loco parentis meant that the college took on the role of the parent and had the responsibilities, but also the power
of a parent,
over the young people, and it became a major issue. We don't think about it so much now, but right. When I was in school, it was a major issue, that where did this power come from?
Right. And in the case of football, like you say, when I started playing professional ball, everything got easier for me. I enjoyed it a lot more.
Why?
I didn't feel... Like in college, even though I think the coaches felt that they should be my parent, they weren't good parents, because I think most of no one ever talked to me directly about anything. I just felt these unhappy attitudes and couldn't quite figure out why. Well, I guess there was a point where I did, particularly in my relationship with Marge. There was a point where that became crystal clear, I could never get anyone to deal directly with me about anything. And in professional ball, things were pretty clear cut, you know, as a job. It was, and I always felt that, well, that had its problems too, but it didn't have... the teams that I played with, there was no confusion about playing ball. I was always the starter. I never had people playing ahead of me who I thought should not be playing ahead of me. I had probably more playing time than anyone on the team that I played with professionally. In fact, I played too much. I thought I could have been, you know, had some relief, more relief than I did have.
So just to remind people, playing ball, you were drafted by?
Right, by the Chicago Bears.
As an
offensive guard.
As an offensive guard.
Right.
And you then went to?
Denver.
To Denver, and finally to?
The Raiders.
The Raiders.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. This is KZYX. I'm your host this morning. I'm Cal Winslow. This is talking about California. Our guest this morning is Mendocino resident Will Smith, and we've been talking about his life and his years as a football player. So, so that sounds good, but once again, there were some problems in your pro career, and I think it's, you know, just to remind people, it's worth not to be too negative, but to spell them out a bit. Do you mind?
No, I'll see what I'll try to. Well, you know, I think even though I experienced the transition from college to college ball to professional ball as being finally, I can, you know, I would not have been able to use the word in loco parentis or see that even as a college ball player. I think the conflicts that that presented for the coaches and for me were eliminated when it went to professional ball. And, you know, you were just judged on your ability to get the job done. But that really wasn't true either. I brought with me a reputation that, again, I was sort of in the dark about. I was fairly young. I think I was 20 years old when I started playing professional ball. And I didn't have anyone. I negotiated all of my contracts, and I really didn't know what the hell I was doing. And that most ball players, when they go into professional ball, get help from someone. Today you have agents, and back then your agents, for the most part, were your college coaches. You know, they helped you, but my college coaches didn't help me. So I was drafted fairly high. I think I was probably the first lineman drafted. I think. I always thought that. I never confirmed it. But I did all of my, I negotiated the whole thing, and I just didn't know how to do that. I learned a lot, but I also brought with me they knew about my my problems in college with the coaches. I didn't know they knew that. I didn't know that that would be a part. So I think I was, I had a reputation that I was still naive about. I didn't realize it. I was still too young and too inexperienced to be able to take into account all that was happening. And in my efforts to negotiate contracts and in my efforts to adjust to the world of professional ball. And then I had a knee injury that created problems, although it didn't create problems with my playing because I continued to play. But it started me, I had personality conflicts with the coaches. That's what, I guess that's the only way to describe it. I was constantly finding myself in conflict about things that I really didn't understand why I was. And I think I discovered later that it was because of the reputation that I brought with me.
But, well, here I go again. But Marge becomes an issue again for you.
True. Well, I think that was a big source. that, you know, I'm an old guy. and I come from a period that most people today, it's so far back in history, they can't believe it. It's hard for anyone to relate to. But that was a, you know, like the the problems with Little Rock High School. That, I think, was the first attempt to integrate, you know, desegregation started there. And that was true for professional ball. It was, they were just getting past, you know, really racist systems that were, everybody was very comfortable with. They were very comfortable with ways of being, and why I was not, and why I was so dense about it, I still marvel.
Well, I think, Bart, Will, is, from what I know of you, you're not very good at complaining. and that's one of the great qualities you have. But I think despite that, our listeners would be interested. I was interested to know, to hear about when you decided that you'd had enough, I guess, of it with the Raiders and the story you told me about Al Davis and how you know, your position and your contract and your treatment worked out with the Raiders. Do you mind? It may not be something you love to talk about.
It's not something I talk about often, but I had the last year I played, I had discovered that I really was not being paid what I felt I'd earned, you know, comparing my productivity, I guess you would say, with other ball players. My productivity was way above theirs, and they were getting paid a lot more than me. And I discovered that the contract that I had signed was for 2 years, and that the only way I could get out of it was to play for 10% less. I could refuse to, rather than sign a new contract for another 2 years, I could play out my second year with a 10% cut in salary. And I chose to do that because I was feeling, I guess I had a good opinion of myself as a way of thinking about it. But I think my record spoke for itself. I thought I would not have any problems getting picked up by another team. And by several teams. I at the end of the exhibition season, Al Davis told me, "You either sign that contract or we're going to get you, kick you out of here." I said, "Do it." And he did it. And I was expecting to get picked up by someone, and it never happened. I didn't, again, I was still naive enough to not realize that these guys talk to each other. You know, that was a foreign thing to me. I was still too young and too inexperienced to know how much was being talked about, you know, how much the owners of clubs cooperate with each other. That seems strange. It seems kind of dumb, even to me now.
Well, it wasn't dumb to notice that a white player playing the same position that you were playing was being paid a lot more than you.
And he was somewhere around 60% effective. I was around 90% effective, or better. And so all of those things were very clear to me, but I just had not put it all together. I was still a kid, and largely.
And so there's a whole bunch more that I want to ask you about, Will, but our time's coming to an end. You still like sports. I've talked to you about it. You still think there's value there.
Tremendous value. I actually do, yeah. I would say that because you have inadequate, I would say that, people running the show, coaches and people, in no way reflects the value of the sport itself and the experience of being a contributing member to a team effort. There are all kinds of positives that go with, and you see that happening today. Football today, basketball today, the appreciation for what it means to be a true contributing member to a team effort has huge positives. So the sport itself is, and you know, I see things happening like a lot of, when I played, it was okay to, you know, do things that today are just not okay. I mean, guys are constantly being, you know, like brutal things are not allowed today that were allowed then, that were not only allowed but encouraged. And a true understanding of what teams can be and should be. I think when I was playing, that wasn't understood by coaches. That's not to say that all coaches were bad people, because they weren't. There were good people along the way. All along the way, there were good people. But it's no indictment. I think, you know, as a culture, we're growing up. You see that happening in politics today. You see it happening with Obama being president.
Well, let me interrupt there. We're kind of running out of time, and I wanted to talk about your work for years after football as a mediator and working to desegregate schools and other institutions, and then your work as a family counselor and mediator up here in Mendocino County. But you just mentioned the election, and we're, as I said, we don't have so much time left, but I did want to ask you your thoughts about the election, and maybe from the perspective of a life of living in a very, you know, changing world, from the segregation of the Deep South to living in a country with an African American president. You want to advise us at all about your thinking along those lines?
Well, I think Obama himself captured what I think and what I believe to be true when he said, after it was clear that he had been elected for a second term, that the best days are ahead of us. I believe that to be true. I think we're on the brink of realizing positives about the American vision. You see, I think Obama's vision of America will be recognized as being the real American dream. It's interesting. I've sort of set for myself the goal of studying American history a lot more closely than I ever have before. But the founding fathers, they were only thinking about themselves when they founded America, I guess you would say, and the rights and responsibilities that they crafted for themselves, really, and then they gave it to, you know, I think women, and then blacks, and then, you know, to other groups, in other words, that's spreading all over. I mean, it's sort of like a contagion, and it is, and it's a good contagion. So I think that Obama being selected for a second term underscores that. Had he not been, had he not won the presidency for a second term, I don't think I would be feeling as optimistic as I do. But I feel very, very, very optimistic, and I do feel that the best days for America are ahead of us.
And does the changing demographics of the country, of California in particular, but the whole country, are they part of that?
They are a part of it. The new coalition that is that was formed to elect him is going to be the force that will make America realize more of its potential than it ever has before. And like I say, I can't talk in specifics to say how it happened, but I think the Founding Fathers, you know, the fact that they had a limited vision for the future, in my opinion, is just speaks to the fact that we're all human, and we don't see the big picture very clearly. Some of us see it more clearly than others, but the Founding Fathers, I have total respect for them. What they came up with was brilliant and good for humankind, if we can actualize its full potential. And I really do think we can. And nothing convinces me more of that than Obama got elected for a second term.
You were a little worried about when it seemed like, geez, how come these guys hate him so much?
Well, I kind of know. I don't think they know why they hate him so much. I think they are conforming to a herd mentality where they are being carried along by the herd. And I think that they'll discover, you know, this coalition of people who elected Obama, really, is, you've heard, I'm sure, and I don't know how many other people, a lot of people who haven't heard of it, but a minority majority is forming that I think will provide leadership for creating a vision for America that I think the world will, that will influence global culture tremendously.
Is there any one problem you'd like to see the administration work on?
No, there are just a whole host of issues that this election brought to the surface, and getting money out of politics, the vote, the sanctity, the sacredness of the vote.
Okay, we are actually out of time now. I want to thank you very much and tell listeners again that this is KZYX, that I'm Cal Winslow, your host on the program Talking About California. This morning we've been talking to Will Smith about his life as a mediator, as a football player, and as a resident of our own part of the world. So thanks, Will. Thanks very much again. And we will be back here in a couple of Thursdays at 9 a.m. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you.